Welcome to the View Tourism Podcast, and I'm Coach Benton Williams. The View Tourism Podcast is dedicated to Africa's travel and tourism industry, where leaders from the private and public sectors get to talk to us. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. In today's episode, founder of US-based Monkey Initiative, Anne-Marie Mascaro, opens up on her motivation for the support and protection of primates. She believes countries need to have the right legislation to support conservation efforts.
Anne-Marie, welcome to the Tourism Podcast. Can you introduce yourself, who you are and what you do?
Thank you so much for having me. Sure. So my name is Anne-Marie Mascaro. I run a nonprofit here in the United States. It's called monkeyfriendly.com. And the spirit behind it really is it's an interdisciplinary website. It's sort of like a small version of LinkedIn for the conservation world. So it allows people to create a profile based on who they are and what category they're in, whether they're a conservationist, an environmental group, an artist, and then through the network online, be able to collaborate with other like-minded people. The idea behind it really is just to get conversations going from people from different backgrounds, but all united with the same goal, which is primate and habitat conservation. So if you want to look at it sort of in two ways, the best way to describe it is on the front end, we have the networking website. And then on the back end, as a nonprofit, I collaborate with different NGOs on the ground to do projects that that support primates and habitat conservation.
Okay, interesting. Now, let's stay on this subject a bit. How did you get into that?
If you
interest in the protection or in this initiative.
Absolutely. So it's kind of interesting. I like to say the seed was planted when I was very young. As somebody from the States, you can imagine that's not a native primate country. So I had a very unusual experience when I was about 7 years old. There was an annual fair that came to town near where I lived. And there was a chimpanzee that had been used in television at the time that used to come through to the fair every year. And you could get your picture taken with him. Now, as a kid, when I was about 7 years old, I was mesmerized by this. The owner of the chimpanzee let me interact with that chimp. And really, I like to say the seed was planted then. I just had a fascination with chimpanzees that I couldn't quite explain. I had a love and a kinship with them. But I knew at the time that chimps did not belong dressed up and entertaining people on TV. So I had a conflict within me. Then as I grew older, I tried to find ways to sort of scratch that itch, if you want to say. And along the way, I graduated. So I have a bachelor's degree in communication. That was my first degree. Then I moved to New York City and tried to find ways to get involved, but not sure exactly how to do it. So I got involved with a chimpanzee behaviorist. Her name is Linda Kobner, and she's one of the original founders of Chimp Haven in Louisiana. And so I started volunteering for her, and I really used my background in communication and marketing as a way to segue into the world of conservation. So alongside a day job working for private bankers in New York City, I was volunteering for Linda Kobner's organization, which essentially is, they call it a retirement home for chimps. So she works with government officials that want to retire chimpanzees out of medical testing from labs. And she set up a sanctuary where it's just, you know, wide open acres for them to be retired to. So I worked on the initial marketing efforts of that organization. And then I was in my early 30s at the time. And then a couple years later, I just got a real urge to interact with chimpanzees in the wild and learn more about their behavior and get involved in a deeper way. So I went and I lived in Uganda for 2 months as a volunteer. I worked at the Uganda Wildlife and Education Center with captive chimpanzees. And again, I just sort of kept feeding this passion that I had, but not really sure where it was going. So when I came back to New York, I continued with my day job, but the love was instilled for me for primates. And it was just something that was always there. So sort of naturally, a natural turn of events after more than a decade of living and working in New York City, I decided I wanted to go abroad and get a master's degree in primate conservation. So I went out to Oxford Brookes and did a master's there in primate conservation, where really the spirit behind the whole program was teaching us community-based conservation. And it was very comprehensive. It was a very interesting program. I finished that and then I moved to London and got my MBA. So I like to sort of say I have a mix of business and conservation background. Fast forward to about 5 years ago, I moved back from London to the United States, continued the same pattern, which was sort of working a traditional day job, but always having this love of primates on the side. And it wasn't until it came full circle, I would say during the COVID time, when I really thought, okay, what do I want to do? How can I sort of put all these pieces together? And that being the marketing background, the business background, and the conservation that I had. And this project, Monkey Friendly, was actually my thesis project out of Oxford Brookes. So it was my final project for the school year there. But originally when it was created, it was very basic and it was written in handwritten computer code before we had more sophisticated programs. So come to the year 2021, I had it redesigned as a website that was a networking website. And turned it into a nonprofit with the goal of knowing that as a nonprofit, I could then partner on projects and actually go from theory to practice. I think that's the best way to say it, is that whereas before I sort of lived with so many different ideas of what to do, by creating a nonprofit, it was my way to put that theory into practice and start taking action. And really just understanding, as somebody that originally came from outside of the world of conservation, that there are so many people that are interested in wildlife conservation and environmental issues, but they don't fit into this neat category of they're a scientist or they work in the field. And I just thought the world is really sort of has an untapped potential of so many people that have a passion for this, but just aren't working in the field, and how can we get them together? So the spirit behind the site really is to start making those interdisciplinary connections and allowing people to contribute to the world of conservation, even if they're not technically, you know, working in the field. So for example, we have artists that create beautiful pieces of art and they donate that to primate sanctuaries. And I just thought, well, these people should be playing in the game just as much as scientists in the field. So that's really the spirit behind it.
Okay, interesting. Giving us a vivid overview of your activities. How long have you been in existence, and how has it been received in the conservation world, especially here in Africa?
How long have I been an assistant, you said?
Yes, please.
If you're talking about professionally as an assistant, I've been working as an assistant ever since graduating with my first degree.
I was making the point that how long has this initiative been in existence?
Oh my gosh. So even though the idea was born years ago, as a graduate project, our actual organization is only a few months old. So you can imagine it's moving so fast. So the way it works here in the States is you go through two levels. You first register on the state level. So in Massachusetts, we registered first, and that was back in October. And then we registered on the national level to get government approval as a 501c3. And we only were approved as a 501c3 back in February. So I've been And I've been working with Greg for about the past 3 months. So we were working together as I was just incorporated in Massachusetts, but now I have that sort of national certification, which allows me to collaborate on a global scale. So we're brand new.
Okay, no, that's fine. Now, yeah. Talk about Greg and Red Rock's cultural initiative. What kind of synergies are you trying to build between the two entities, yourself and that of Red Rock?
Yeah. Well, we love to say that we're sort of two halves of a whole. So Greg's organization has really focused on people and culture and carrying on traditions and preserving and protecting those traditions. And my organization is focused on primates and habitat. So when we first met and we started talking about the possibility of collaborating, we really loved this idea of we could be designing projects that are really three-dimensional because we'll design them with people and primates in mind. So when I met Greg, I sort of recognized instantly that we're both people that are, I would say, visionaries. We like to be thinking about what could be done and how we can solve problems. We're both very creative and we're both action-oriented. So in having conversations with him, I realized quite quickly that it would be fun to collaborate. And the more we started talking about our visions of what we could do together, the more we realized we were on the same page. So again, coming from the background of community-based conservation, which is how I was trained, and then of course, Greg being an expert in the field, our philosophies really align well. I think we both respect each other's point of view and we both bring something different to the table. So some of our initiatives involve really just piggybacking off of some of the ideas he's already got in place. And then others are completely new, starting something completely from scratch. For example, if you want to take the music initiative that we're working on, I had known from the States here that there are different projects where artists are getting paid for their music, whether that be in terms of a ringtone or getting paid because their music appears on a TV commercial or radio ad. And so I had mentioned to Greg, why don't we take your existing program, which is the music, and add to that, you know, applying for royalties so that you have sustainable income. So I just, you know, we both love this synergy that we're both respecting each other's process and ideas, but we're just adding to it. We use the analogy of we sort of have the cake and we're adding the icing to it.
Okay.
So that's one of them. One of the other ones we're really excited about is the International Artist Initiative. So one of the goals that Greg had mentioned when we first met was he wanted to take Red Rocks to an international level and get more awareness from the international community on his projects. So we liked the idea of taking something really peaceable and neutral like art, and he's already created an art gallery. And we said, why don't we invite international artists in too, so that we basically open the door for more conversations and more connections to come through. So one of our first artists is an artist from Israel, and he focuses more on social causes. And we like this idea of sort of having two main categories of international artists that we'll represent. So it's artists that either focus on wildlife conservation or social causes, because that's the nature of our two organizations. And then we're inviting them in to display at the gallery out in Red Rocks. So we're really excited about that because it just, art is just a great happy medium to get people involved, to start discussions and to collaborate as well as network. So we feel really optimistic about that.
Excellent. Now, when it comes to the tangibles in your short to medium term plan, what are you looking to achieve with this project?
With the international artist?
No, with the entire project, the Monkey Film Initiative.
Yeah, I would say with my collaboration with Red Rocks, two things. We would love to see interesting sustainable income sources come in because I think COVID has sort of taught us all that if if we're relying too much on the tourism industry or gorilla trekking alone, that it could be dangerous if that all of a sudden shifts. So let's start thinking creatively about different ways to bring in money. That would be one piece. And the second piece, like I said, I had mentioned that on the back end, we're also collaborating on conservation projects. So the piece from my organization's point of view is we're looking at some reforesting projects, and I would love to see primates get impacted in a positive way. You know, there's just so many different things that are tied in with livelihoods and the incidents, from my point of view, of whether or not primates are threatened, that if I can impact that in a positive way through my collaboration with Red Rocks, that would be a win.
Excellent. Now, how are you going to fund your activities?
Yeah, so what's fantastic in two ways. The first way is just through manpower, just the actual like collaboration of us working together to do projects and getting a network of volunteers. So there's no money exchanged, but there's labor exchanged. So that's one way. The second way is with the 501c3 status that my organization has, as well as the status that Greg's organization has, it allows us to apply for grants. So we're looking to various grants to fund the initiatives as well, alongside our networks. So Greg has fantastic networks. I have good networks. So we're sort of using the manpower from the people involved in our networks as well as the organizations, and allowing that to help us reach our goals.
Perfect. Now, as you wrap up, one thing I'm going to ask again is, how sustaining are you going to use this funding sources to make this project something that it can, you know, it can live the test of time?
It's such an excellent question, and I'm so glad you asked this, because again, going back to the spirit of the community-based conservation that we both believe in, I can point you to the water initiative that we're working on. So right now there's an existing water project that's starting to show some signs of wear, that we're working on getting upgraded at the moment. And behind that, what we want to do is get a grant that where a company comes in and helps maintain the existing water system and expand it, but then design the program such that it's community-based. So for example, if everybody that's participating in receiving the water contributes, let's say the equivalent of $1 per month, then the community actually sustains it. And in this way, the community operates from a position of strength, because they're really only having the grant to kickstart the project, but then they themselves will be maintaining it. So everything that we do is designed with community-based conservation in mind, and using, like for example, sales of art to fund things, the music royalty money to fund things, the collective power of people contributing to the water project to fund things. So really the outside funding, if you look at it as only just a way to kickstart things that we have designed, and that they're all being designed with sustainability in mind.
Oh, excellent. Now, who qualifies to join this initiative? Because you did mention volunteership and other aspect that people can join and, you know, support this project.
Yeah, and no, it's a great question. We don't want to be strict with certain like specific ruling out people, like you have to have a certain degree or this, that, or the other. I think the biggest thing that we both agree on is we want people that are passionate about conservation from the angles that we are. So you know, community-based, preserving cultures, sustainable income, primates, habitat. We're looking at, Greg is working with a couple universities that will be sharing their network of students that are focused on, they're primarily from the sciences, but they're different fields, and they're going to be volunteering. I have my network from Oxford Brookes that we're going to be using volunteers from there as well. And then I would say it really just depends on the background and interest of the volunteer as to what initiative they'll get involved with. So Let's say we have a working artist, well, they could be anywhere in the world, because right now we're welcoming remote-based volunteers. So they could be a working artist in New York, in Kenya, anywhere. And if they want to get involved with our initiatives, as long as there's the passion and interest there, they can do it remotely. And then in terms of on the ground, I think we'll see things shift a little bit once tourism opens up more in Rwanda. For some of the initiatives that are actually on the ground, like teachers that we want to welcome for the Youth Conservation Education Project, those people obviously will have to be based in Rwanda, but there's so much that we can do remotely, as we're seeing through this pandemic.
Finally, what would you say is your biggest concern yet with respect to the conservation of primates?
It's such a great question. I feel like laws really have to be in place. You know, you can do so much on the ground, you can mobilize people, but if fundamentally the laws aren't there that support what you're doing, I worry that we won't see lasting change. I know if you want to look to Costa Rica, for example, the government actually provides incentives for people to reforest the land. So money and conservation work hand in hand in a positive way. And I would just love to see that on a macro level, that there's support for projects that are done on a micro level, and so that they can work hand in hand. And then I think there'll be success, but I feel like one hand has to help the other.
Anne-Marie Mascaro, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Kojo.